Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Christina Mislan, Assistant Professor of Journalism Studies at the Missouri School of Journalism. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Sonali.
An international meeting took place in Bangkok earlier today to discuss the crisis of Rohingya refugees. The Rohingya are a Muslim minority from Myanmar who have been escaping persecution only to risk their lives at sea as they attempt to reach Malaysia and other nations. Representatives from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, met with officials from the U.S., Switzerland, and the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR. The Myanmar government threatened to boycott the talks if the word Rohingya was used, but attended in the end. Responding to criticism, Myanmar's representatives, U Tin Lin, refused to accept responsibility and accused the attendees of singling out his country. Meanwhile, members of ASEAN agreed to increase efforts to search and rescue the thousands of migrants still stranded at sea. Myanmar announced that its navy had seized a boat with 700 people on board. Well, Christina, can international pressure force Myanmar to improve conditions for its Rohingya population, a people that it refuses to even name?
Yeah, I think historically speaking, international pressure has often influenced the domestic politics of a nation. Anytime mistreatment and discrimination, and as you just mentioned, the non-naming of an entire group of people rejecting basically citizenship status, right? We're talking about thousands of people, has been brought into international spotlight, there's always going to be more pressure for political officials to act. But it's important to understand that, of course, for political officials to act, they have to feel like there are going to be political and economic interests at stake, because they want to, so often nation states want to brand themselves, right? And so international pressure is really important. And I think we can learn lessons from U.S. discussions about immigration reform, as well as Western Europe's recent responses to their issues with immigration as well, and hope that if we continue to pressure the government of Myanmar, that maybe there will be responses to addressing this issue.
And then ISIS has claimed responsibility for bombing in Saudi Arabia that killed three people. The attack took place in the parking lot of a Shia mosque earlier today when a suicide bomber dressed as a woman was thwarted from entering the building. The incident comes a week after a deadly attack killed 21 people and injured nearly 100 at another mosque. ISIS appears to be trying to foment violence between Saudi Arabia's Sunni and Shia populations in an effort to destabilize the monarchy. The situation is ironic given that Saudi Arabia was one of several nations that supplied Syrian rebels with arms, many of which flowed to ISIS soldiers. Christina, is this a matter of Saudi Arabia's chickens coming home to roost?
Well, I think, you know, it's a tragic outcome. Again, there are lessons to learn when nation states intervene into the politics of others. So as we can see here is the prime example that the U.S. is not the only nation that isn't immune to the consequences of foreign policy. And you know, we also have to put into context that, you know, Saudi Arabia's close political ties with U.S. interests also need to be accounted for. For instance, the ongoing cooperation between these two countries on maintaining what they would call regional stability, regulating the oil, international oil market, continuing this so-called war on terror, right? I mean, this is really an important conversation when it comes to the emergence of ISIS in the Middle East. Continuing that conversation really illustrates Saudi Arabia has served as a puppet for the United States. And so, of course, there are going to be consequences, albeit tragic ones.
And finally, here in the United States, the ACLU has just released a report on policing in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The report analyzed arrest records obtained by the Civil Liberties Group over a two-year period. It found that African Americans were nearly nine times more likely to be arrested for low-level offenses than whites. A similar statistic emerged for Native Americans. A whopping 40% of all arrests were of young people violating curfew. Minneapolis requires teens between 15 and 17 years of age to be indoors past 11 p.m., but 56% of those arrested for curfew violations were of black teens. The report emerged after a high-profile case came to light of four youth of Somali descent who were pulled over by a cop on suspicion of driving a stolen car. The car was legally theirs. A video of the encounter revealed the officer in question threatening to break the teenager's legs and justifying the arrest just because, quote, "I feel like arresting you." Christina, certainly no one can be surprised by the results of the study, but can such studies be a first step in addressing such policing disparities?
Yeah, well, I think first the discussion of disparities allows us to re-examine the legal system in this country. And this article, along with the hundreds of other articles we've seen come out in the past year or so, I think understanding that this isn't really a justice system, but one that continues to discipline and regulate brown bodies, brown and black bodies, that is the first step, right? And so I think now there's a question of where do we go from here? Where do we go from a conversation about these disparities? And some might say that my answer is impossible or so-called radical, but I really think the way that we can start addressing these disparities is really by dismantling the system, rethinking and coming up with alternative ways of creating a real justice system that reflects the so-called democracy that we supposedly live in. And for this country, that's pretty revolutionary. And I think so we'll have to continue to call not for reform, but transformation, one that focuses on dismantling white supremacy.
Christina Mislan, I always appreciate your analysis. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Christina Mislan is an assistant professor of journalism studies at the Missouri School of Journalism. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.